Good evening, everyone. My name is Anthony, and I am definitely an alcoholic. Thank you, Mark, and thank you for the invitation. I want to thank Mark, and I want to thank the Westfield Big Book Workshop for the very kind invitation to come and share some of my experience. When I think about where I came from and where I was roughly 6 years ago, the fact that anyone's inviting me to speak about anything is like a miracle, you know? So my sponsor is actually Mickey M. of Denver, Colorado. My home group is the Pathway to Power Big Book Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet in Middletown, New Jersey every Thursday at 7:30, and we go through the text line by line. It's actually a pretty cool format. We took it from a format from a group up in Yonkers, but it's Joe and Charlie and a couple of people just rip the book apart, and it's really fun. If you're ever in town, and it's only about 35 minutes from here, so I encourage you to stop in and check us out. We also have a Saturday night hour-long speaker meeting, which we kind of, you know, liked that format because we were looking around Alcoholics Anonymous, and we were looking at a lot of the beginner meetings, and a lot of them were just like kind of discussion meetings, and I don't know. I felt when I was new, I really needed to hear, you know, a message that had depth and weight. So we bring in someone who speaks for an hour, and it's like a workshop. It turns into a Q&A, and beginners have an opportunity to ask direct questions to someone who's had, you know, a 12-step experience. With that, my date of rebirth is what I call it today. Is May 1st of 2016. It's the most important date in my life. I couldn't think of another date. I graduated from a prestigious university. I can't even remember what day that was. You know, if I'm ever to, you know, get married to a beautiful woman, I think that date would be more important than the anniversary date, because that is the day when my Creator entered into my heart and began to transform me, you know, in a way. The only way I can explain it, and the only word I could use, and I know I'm pulling it right from the book, is a miracle, you know. And so I have no idea what I'm going to talk about, but I think for the next 6 weeks, what I'm going to talk about is the work we do in this program. Where do I begin? You know, when I was a kid, I don't know if you guys can identify with this. And I just want to say, like, right up front, if you can't identify with the things I'm saying, there's other speakers and there's other sponsors and there's other groups and there's other people. Don't let it scare you out of the room. Congratulations, Dee. Welcome, you know. And I can remember what it was like to have 31 days and counting meetings. And, you know, it was exciting in the beginning for me. It really was. This is not, May 1st of 2016 is not the first time I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. I probably arrived here in the mid-90s. Back then, you know, I was probably drinking every day, and every once in a while when I get a paycheck, I disappear and smoke crack for 4 or 5 days. And I think I definitely deserved my seat in Alcoholics Anonymous then. But I was going around to a lot of meetings, and there was just it was just kind of a cloudy message at the time. You know, I was going into meetings in Lower Manhattan, and I was going into meetings down in Monmouth County, and a lot of people were just discussing their problems. And to me, I know that wasn't the message, right? But those were the meetings I was going to, and I just felt like it was like a group therapy, and I wasn't getting any better. Now, you know, I know there's a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've heard it because they come into my group every week, and I hear them say, you know what, I hung around Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time, and I started getting so sick, I felt like I would put a gun in my mouth and pull the trigger, and then I was introduced to the 12 steps a few years in. See, that wasn't my experience, because I was one of those type 4 alcoholics, you know, the hopeless variety. I just couldn't stay sober for 7 days on meetings alone. That was just me. I'd come in, I'd collect a coin. I really got sober actually down in Charlotte, North Carolina. Anyone ever been down there? It's a great AA program down there, and one thing they would do is they'd give a white chip. When you're new and you raise your hand and you say, this is my first meeting and day one, and they had poker chip system, and they'd give you a white chip. and I was just picking up white chip after 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 white chip. And it just, I'd see other people get 90 days and 6 months and 9 months and get that coveted blue chip, that 1 year chip. But I just thought that there was something wrong with me. There was just something fundamentally wrong with me. I don't know if you guys ever felt like that coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, but I got to tell you, I had a lot of problems. I didn't just have alcohol problems. I had relationship problems, lack of relationship problems. I had sex problems. I had employment problems, or better yet, lack of employment problems, right? And I mean it. Like, I know a couple of you giggled when I said I had sex problems. That's a serious problem to have when you're coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, and the only way I could find intimacy is by paying someone cash, finding love on a street corner. That's what my life looked like. And I just couldn't seem to get anything to work in my life. And I looked around, and I would watch people live their life with ease. You know, I would see themselves, they would live their life with ease. You know, I went down to North Carolina in 2006, and that's where I met my first big book sponsor. You know, I'm going to just kind of talk about that for a minute, because I hit a telephone pole going about 70 miles an hour back in 2006. I snapped it. I was thrown through the windshield. It was my third DUI. I wound up in an ICU. I was in a lot of trouble. And I knew I was in a lot of trouble. I knew they were going to take my driver's license for a lot of years. And so what I did was, I like to think, anyone here think they're smarter than the system? I go down to North Carolina and I get a North Carolina driver's license. And I did that. I did that thinking I could outsmart the system, because I don't know about any of you, but I can't not drive for 10 years. That's insane, right? So I had a pretty good attorney. He was my brother. And he basically told me, if you check into a treatment center, and I didn't have any money, but he said, if you check into a treatment center, until we go to court, I could probably get you out of going to jail. I had already been incarcerated at that point, and I just didn't want to go back to jail. And so he said, if you check into a treatment center until the court comes, we could probably stave off the jail time, but you'd have to, plead guilty to the DUI and whatnot. And so what I said was, okay. And I checked into a place called Teen Challenge. And I don't know if any of you are familiar with Teen Challenge, but it's a faith-based, it's not a 12-step-based treatment center. It's like a homeless shelter. It's free. You don't have to pay anything, and you could stay there up to 2 years. And so I went in there, and the message they were telling me was, get down on your knees and accept Jesus Christ in your heart as your Lord and Savior, or you are screwed. And I got to tell you, look, if you're sitting in this room and you are a Christian, don't be offended by what I'm going to say. I just wasn't ready for that kind of message back then. And I wasn't ready to receive that kind of a message back then. And so I basically stayed there for as long as I could take it. And then I busted my way out. But my plan worked. I was smart. You know, I did stave off the jail. I was able to get the driver's license and have all of the probation and everything flipped down there. But you see, the thing about me is like, and I've always been this way, and I don't know if you guys can identify with this, but if you can, I mean, I would clean up really quickly, right? I mean, I literally would go from like sticking syringes in my arms and sucking on glass pipes to all of a sudden I have a job and a suit and a tie, and I have a lease on a new car, and I got a pretty new girlfriend, and everything looks good on the outside. And the delusional mind that I live with, that is, if everything looks good on the outside, I'm okay. If you guys think I'm okay, I'm okay. But it's a delusion, because I'm all eat up on the inside. So pretty quickly, I get a corporate sales job in uptown Charlotte. And I'm working in the cubicles, and it's in a high rise in a Grant Thornton building. And on the top floor is fine dining establishment. And I don't know if it was like the first day I was there, all the guys that I was working with were like, man, there's happy hour up at Bentley's. You want to go? No, man, I'm good. Now, listen, I just want to tell you, like, I hadn't had a drink or a drug for 5 months. How's that? I was in Teen Challenge, man. I came out of there. I didn't even think about it. It was the last thing on my mind. I said, I'm definitely not going to drink again. It's caused me too many problems. I have 3 DUIs. Day 2. Hey, bro, you want to go up to happy hour? No, man. You good. You good. You guys go ahead. I don't know what day. Day 3, day 4, but I wound up going up to Bentley's, and I can't tell you. I don't remember how much I drank. But I remember what happened that night. And maybe it was the next night, actually. I hit a car that hit another car that smashed into another car that was stopped at a light. I had a prostitute in the car. I was trying to light a crack pipe. Well, she was lighting a crack pipe. And I was looking at her, not keeping my eyes on the road. I was wasted out of my skull. And I'm back in the same position. You know, so the first thing I do when the airbags come out and I realize, oh, shit, I'm screwed, is I jump up and I just start running, you know, and they chase me down and they tackle me to the ground. And, you know, the police officer, he puts me in the back of his car. And I don't know. Listen, I'm not even going to call this guy a police officer. I think he was an angel. I really do. And I'll tell you why. I'm going to make a long story short. I'm not going to go on and on with war stories. He pulled me out of the back of the car and he said, sir, I want you to tell me the whole truth. And if you tell me a lie, you're going to jail. Do you understand? And I said, yeah, I understand. And he said, what were you doing over on this side of town? Were you over here to buy drugs? And I looked at the ground and I said, no, I wasn't. And he said, well, who was the woman in the car? Was she him? Was she a working girl? I don't know what came over me, right? But I just kind of nodded my head and I said, yes, she was. And he had me blow the breathalyzer right there and I was way over the legal limit. He could have had me on so many charges that night. He could have had me on fleeing the scene of an accident, resisting arrest. Ba, 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 ba. He says, I'm going to give you a 2-point ticket for failure to reduce speed. And he drove me home that night. And when I was getting out of his car, he said, son, you have a drinking problem. And you better do something about it. And he gave me a card. He said, this man will help you. You know? And it was a card for a pastor at a church called Elevation Church. Never forget that day. But I was back in the same position I always ended up in again and again and again. And I just couldn't get my life to work, man. And I fell to my knees that night and I cried my eyes out. I had lost my job. My car was totaled. I'm in a state where I have no family around. And what do? I didn't go talk to that pastor, but I went down to the place that, you know, I always went. I was raised a Catholic, so I went to a Catholic church. And I talked to a priest. And I just started pouring my heart out. I was like kind of giving him a fifth step, you know. I was talking to him about these alcohol problems and the drug problems, the car accident problems, the sex problems, the relationship problems. I'm telling him everything. And he looked at me at one point and he said, Anthony, why don't you just try Alcoholics Anonymous? I said, Father, I said, Alcoholics Anonymous may work for you, but it doesn't work for me. Trust me, I've clocked in hundreds of it. Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. And I had clocked in hundreds of them. Man, I knew so much about Alcoholics Anonymous. I was the type of guy, and can anyone identify with this? I'm the type of guy, I would go around the room and I'd listen to Mark share something, and I'd listen to Jill share something, and I'd listen to all you people share something, and I'd clip something from everything everyone said, and I'd go regurgitate it all over town. That's what I would do. And people would come up to me and be like, wow, man, that was a bomb share. Can you come in and share for 15 minutes on the second step? And I'd go in there and boom, I'm talking about a power greater than myself. And before you know it, you know, people are like, wow, man, that was great. Here's a pound. But then I'd disappear. And the newcomer would be like, what happened to Anthony C? And there'd be some old timer in the back of the room. He'd say, Anthony C, he's smoking crack somewhere, man. I mean, that was me. I was a fraud, you know? And he told me something. He said, look, man, this one meeting, you know, it meets every night at 10 p.m. And I think it would be really good for a guy like you. And I really just want to see if you'd give it a shot. And I, for whatever reason, I was just so broken and I just needed help. So I said, okay, Father, I'll go do it. And I went, it was on East Boulevard in Charlotte, and it was one of those meetings that met every night at 10 p.m., every single night of the week, and every night it was a different format. You know, it was a speaker discussion one night, it was a big book meeting one night, it was a 12-in-12 meeting one night, it was an Asbel Caesar meeting one night. And I walked into this room, and it was a big book meeting that night. And I could sense something as soon as I walked into the room. I could sense it. I could feel the energy. I could feel the power in the room. And listen, I walked into meetings where the first power I ever connected with in Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is a fact, was you. It was the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm not one here who slays meeting makers from the podium. I don't do that, right? Because the four most important words in this big book here are we of Alcoholics Anonymous. And man, long before I could grasp onto anything like a God of my understanding, you know, the only power I experienced was the power in that room and people coming up to me and hugging me. And for the first time, I'm looking around the room. Everything I'd experienced was like a bunch of old guys sitting around talking about burning their marriages to the ground and getting divorced and, you know, losing their businesses and, you know, having the mortgage holder take over the home. And I never had, I was never able to own a home. I was like, you know what I was when I got sober in 2016? You know what they asked me at the hospital? They said, are you indigent? You know what indigent means? It means I didn't have two pennies to rub together. It means I didn't even have a quarter to make a phone call. That's what my life looked like. You know, but you know, I tell you, I'm taking it back to 2006, man. I'm sitting in this room and I see this guy from across the room. And this guy's a little bit older than me and he's kind of handsome and he's got glasses on. And I notice there's something about this guy that's different, and it's different than me. Because I'm the type of guy that just can never sit still in my chair. Anybody like that, right? I'm still, even with a 12-step experience, sometimes my leg's constantly tapping and I feel like I have all this energy and I'm climbing out of my skin and I'm smoking one cigarette after another cigarette after another cigarette. I'm just restless and I'm irritable all the time, right? And so I see this guy. He's sitting about as far as you are right there. And I see him and he's just calm and he's like super, 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 super serene. And I said, man, I'm watching this guy. And all of a sudden, I hear them start talking about something I never heard them talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had been in Alcoholics Anonymous for a lot of years, and I never heard anyone talk about a physical allergy, a phenomenon of craving. You know, and I'm listening to this. I'm listening to it, and I'm saying, I think this is what's wrong with me. I think that this is really something that's... all of a sudden... What does it say in the big book? It says something about it qualifies something that which we could not otherwise. I'm not a real big quoter, but you know what I'm talking about. Nothing seemed to make sense, right? Until all of a sudden, something just clicked in my head that maybe I was bodily different than my fellows. Maybe I'm just bodily different than my fellows. Maybe I just can't. You know, I don't know. Something magical happened that night. And I walked up to the guy and I reached out my hand and I said, hey, my name is Anthony. And he said, my name's Tom. And I said, will you be my temporary sponsor? It was the only language I knew. And you know what he said to me? He said, you want temporary sobriety? I said, no, man, I want to stay sober for good. And he goes, I'll do your rock solid. I will be your permanent sponsor. How's that? He said, but this is what I want you to do, right? He said, I want you to go to 3 meetings a week. That's it. He didn't tell me I had to run around lighting the place on fire, going to a meeting every day. He said, pick out 3 meetings you like every week and go to them and get a copy of this book. And we're going to start going through it. And we're going to read through it. When it suggests that we do things, like get down on our knees and pray, we'll do those things. Does that sound good? Does that sound fair? When it asks us to do things like write, make a list, we'll do those things. When it asks us to do things like knock on the door and pay back a little bit of money we owe, we'll do those things. Does that sound fair? And I said, yeah, that sounds fair. And he said, okay. Rock star. Boom. He gave me a fist pound. He said,
one other thing. When we're done doing this, are you willing to carry it to someone else? I had no idea what I was in for. You know what I mean? That's the truth. Now listen, Tom was my sponsor for 10 straight years, and I just want to say this. I guess we go to 7:30, right? I guess I'm going to talk about the first step today. I want to say that I got sober for a number of years. I had a 12-step experience, and I wound up collecting a few things. Has anyone have been sober for a little while here? We got a bunch of people who sober for a while here. One of the good thing about I don't think time protects me from a drink, and I don't think it makes me any better than anyone in the room. But one thing that happens when we start to put together time is we start to collect stuff. You know, like we collect a good credit score, you know, and we collect houses and cars and careers and relationships. And I started to collect some things. You know, I had this dream of being an actor and moving to Hollywood, and that's what I did. You know, and I met this beautiful, sober woman in AA, and we had a beautiful relationship. And I had a European sports car, and I lived out in Studio City, man. And I got to tell you, man, I've been all over the country, and I've been in AA in a lot of different states. And one of the coolest places I ever went to AA was Southern California. You know, they have this tradition, like when you celebrate, they actually get you a birthday cake and light the candles and sing happy birthday to you. It's really cool. But you see, what happened was all those things I collected, I started to make more important than my relationship with God. You know, and the first thing I stopped doing, I think, was really praying and meditating. You know, my career got really important, you know. That home group thing that I was doing. Nah, listen, I got to run around. I got to do auditions. I'm on sets, and I don't really need sponsoring guys, man. That's not really for me. I'll leave that to the guys that have the time for that. You know. And then all of a sudden, I start acting out. I got the girl I'm living with, and I'm going to this hotel room and that hotel room, and I'm just not satisfied. One thing about being an alcoholic is if I'm left untreated, I'm just never, ever satisfied. You know that? I'm never, ever satisfied. I've never got enough money. I've never got a good enough job. I've never got a good enough girlfriend. I've never got enough sex. I've never got enough love. I've never got enough adoration. I'll never have enough booze. I'll never have enough crack. I'll never have enough dope. I'll never have enough of anything. You know how I know I'm an alcoholic? Yeah, I work in treatment, and I'm in this woman's office, and she's got this big bowl of sugar, you know? And I nerds and Twizzlers and Kit Kats and Milky Ways and Snickers. And I go in and I'm sitting there talking to her. She's like a clinician. And I'm just going in her bowl and I'm just eating one thing at a time. One thing, after another chocolate bar, after another bag of Skittles. And all of a sudden I get up, I'm like, all right, I'll see you tomorrow. And I left and I get in my car and I'm literally driving my car down the parkway. And all of a sudden, man, I start feeling this weak feeling in my stomach, and my hands start tingling and I start sweating, and I'm like, oh my God, I pull the car over and I can't even drive the car. I feel like I'm a diabetic in shock. I called the doctor at my work. I told him exactly what I told you, and he said, no man, you're not diabetic, you're just an alcoholic, now stop eating sugar. That's what he said to me, man. And you know, the truth is, look, one is too many, and a thousand is it will never, ever, ever, ever be enough. I have this disease of more, you know. So I picked up after, I don't know, I mean, I used to say it was 5 years. I don't know how much time, if I'm going to be honest, I don't know how much time I put together. I stopped picking up chips when I was in California. I think it was about as much time as I have now, you know. And I wound up in the wrong place at the wrong time, and there was a glass pipe on the bed, and that was all she wrote. And I just want to tell you this, like I used to hear in AA meetings all the time, like, you pick up where you left off. Anyone ever hear that? I call it bullshit. I really do. They say this, you know what it says on page 30, that this disease is progressive and fatal, right? And when they say it's progressive, I think it progresses even when you're not drinking, you know. And I got to tell you that I where I picked up was where I would have been if I never stopped, you know, because and I know this is a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and if anyone's offended, I'm sorry. It's just, you know, it's just like it's a reality, right? It went from alcohol and crack cocaine to methamphetamine and heroin, shooting it intravenously. And I want to tell you that everything I collected, I lost within 6 months, and I was penniless, and I was homeless, and I was living in Skid Row in Los Angeles. And let me tell you something about Skid Row in Los Angeles. It permanently changed me. It permanently changed me. When I say, when I sit up here and I tell you that I feel that a miraculous thing has occurred in my life, I came in here and I was broken and I had hepatitis C and my arm was paralyzed and my kidneys were shot and I was hooked up to kidney dialysis machines for 2 months in an ICU. That's how I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. And we will talk more about that over this 6 weeks. But I believe a miracle has occurred for me. But I want to talk about the first step because, I don't know, ever since I was a child, I always felt that there was something different about Anthony C., right? And I don't know any other way to explain it except the way I'm about to explain it to you right now. My heart always felt like it was broken. Anyone ever feel that way? Like, long before she came into my life. It was always broken, and it didn't matter what I would pour on top of it. I put so much booze and tried to drown it with booze. It just didn't work. I put so much sex and tried to drown it with sex. I put so much love, I tried to drown it with love. It just didn't work. It was just, nothing ever satisfied it. And I didn't realize until I came into Alcoholics Anonymous that the only thing that would satisfy it was a relationship with God. And the greatest spiritual teacher that I've ever gotten to know taught me that the way I serve God is by getting down on my knees and washing your feet and helping you. And so, I'm going to just open up the book and I'm going to read a little bit because it's one of my favorite parts of the book, but it comes from the doctor's opinion. And if you have your books, if you want to just open it up, in the fourth edition, it's XXVIII, and it says, "We believe." I think they're talking about the medical fraternity, right? "We believe," and so suggested a few years ago, "that the action of alcohol, the effect that alcohol has on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy." You know, I can't stop getting stuck on that one word, chronic. See it? Chronic. You ever hear that word growing up? Like, when I heard that growing up, it was like, you got the chronic? You got the chronic? Anybody know the chronic, the marijuana? But I think what they're talking about is the condition of alcoholism. It's a chronic condition. It's like a habitual. It's like a... you know what I think that means? And really, you know, I can understand this intellectually, but how does it go from my head to my heart? I got to experience that, man. You know, and the truth is, chronic means it's never, ever, ever going to go away. It's just a part of it. It's like a really bad case of herpes. Anybody have that? Yeah, we all laugh. Half the room, I know, at least half the room has it. But you know, the truth is, you get a condition like that, it never goes away. And you know when it crops up? At the most inopportune times. Yeah? People used to say, "Dude, that's crude. Do not say that in an AA meeting." Well, it's a fact. And alcoholism is very much like that. Because when something really important happens, like an important date, and then all of a sudden I got that fever sore on my face, but you know what? I get an important job interview. You know, the one that's just going to pay the bills, man. And then, 24 hours before then, I get the bright idea that it might be a good idea to just pick up just one drink, just to take the edge off. Anyone ever experienced that? I mean, that's a really, really... what we're talking about right now is the alcoholic torture, right? It says that this phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and absolutely never occurs in the average temperate drinker. So, you know, my sponsor asked me right away, he said, "What happens?" Really, he ask yourself the question, I'm under no delusion that everyone in this room is an alcoholic. I know that everyone in Alcoholics Anonymous is probably not an alcoholic. But you know what my sponsor, he said to me when he sat me down? He said, we have to find out what our truth is. Because when I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm raising my hand and I'm saying my name is Anthony and I'm definitely an alcoholic. But I'm only saying it because I know that I have to say it to fit in with you, period. And you know what? When you're homeless and they got Starbucks coffee and some donuts in there, it sounds like a pretty good deal. You know what I mean? Not only that, but like there might even be like I might even be able to find a woman who's broken enough to want to have something to do with me. And those were the reasons I was coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, believe it or not. These were the reasons I was coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. I wasn't really coming here to get well. That's the truth. I can only speak my truth. And so I have to find out what an alcoholic is. So the purpose of the first step, as the way I was brought through, it's to qualify us. It's to let us know what this condition is. You know, listen, man, there's a lot of self-knowledge in the first step. There really is. And that's when Bill Wilson says in his story that self-knowledge alone will not fix me. Listen, I can have all the knowledge in the world I want to know about alcoholism, but it's not going to get me well. Right? But I need to know what the problem is. I'm going to take a little tangent and I'm going to skip to the forward to the second edition because it says this, right? And I love this. It says, the physician had repeatedly tried spiritual means to resolve his alcoholic dilemma. This is on XVI, right? You know, Dr. Bott was a very, very religious guy. But the only problem is, like, religion doesn't work. Nah, please don't be offended, right? But religion alone, I consider myself today a religious man, right? But I had repeatedly tried spiritual means outside of doing the 12 steps, and it just didn't work. So I identify with what Dr. Bob says. It says, when the broker gave him Dr. Silkworth's description of alcoholism and its hopelessness, the physician began to pursue the spiritual remedy for his malady with a willingness he had never before been able to muster. And I just want to tell you that the one thing that really sets Alcoholics Anonymous apart from every other spiritual movement on this planet is the first step. It's knowledge of the problem. And I've really got to know what it is that's wrong with me. Man, I would never come up to a podium and act like I'm well. Because I'm not. The more I know about alcoholism, the more I understand that I'm really sick. And that I have a need for the 12 steps. I have a need for power. I have a need for love and forgiveness. I have a need for redemption. And I have a need for resurrection. I was reborn through these 12 steps. I want to go back into what it's saying here in the doctor's opinion, though. It says, these allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. Now, ask yourself this. I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, but what is any form to you? Because I'll tell you what it is to me. I can't drink any alcohol. Well, I mean, I can. I mean, I absolutely can, but I can't do it safely. Meaning, like, what do they mean by safely? Well, you know, if I pick it up, who knows what's going to happen? You know, I mean, the truth that, like, let me tell you a story. This story is not about me. It's about a young lady. I was down in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I saw this woman in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she was beautiful. She was very well-dressed, and she had beautiful glasses, and she looked like a librarian. She looked like just the kind of woman I would like to take home and introduce to my mom, right? I mean, I thought that as soon as I saw her. Her name was Jessica. She was beautiful. And I walked over to her and I said, hey, you know, can we have a cup of coffee? I'd really like to get to know you. And she said, sure. And I went out with her and I sat down and we were sitting at Starbucks and she said, I was in prison for 7 years. And I said, prison? You prison? Like, you look like a master's degree, Ken. Like, seriously? And she said, yeah. And I said, well, what happened? And she said, well, I was up for a couple of days drinking and I was in my car and I blew a stop sign and I hit an SUV and there was a 12-year-old girl in the passenger seat and she died.
And that's, you know, I can never safely use it. I don't know what's going to happen. You know, and we talk about, you know, we talk about what we, you know, do to ourselves. But can you imagine? Thank God I never killed anyone. Can you imagine what that amends look like? So, what is this any form at all? I can't safely use it, but like, are they talking about beer and wine? Definitely. All hard stuff. Alcohol, clearly, right? I really should be careful what kind of mouthwash I use, too. I mean, that's the truth. Because if I really have an allergy, and I really put it in me, and I get lit up and something happens to me, I just can't stop. I really should watch what I put in my body. But this also includes pills, powders, plants, crystals, rocks. It might even include some of the media I put into my mind. Yeah? Dude, this is a dangerous thing, guys. It's a real dangerous thing. And I'm a really sick guy. And I get on the wrong website and I'm looking at the wrong stuff. I may end out on a tear and I may end up at the extended stay hotel and you may never see me again. And I'm afraid if I ever pick up again, you won't ever see me again. That's just the way it is for me, for this alcoholic. So it says this, right? I'm just going to skip down to the next paragraph where it says, frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. The message which can interest and hold these alcoholic people must have depth and weight. Wow. Dude, think about what they're saying. I don't know. I think when I met Tom, whatever he said to me carried some depth. And it carried some weight. I knew just from his little qualification for 5 minutes in the meeting that this guy had what I had. And you know, he didn't even mention alcohol once. He didn't mention alcohol once. You know what he talked about? What it was like to live in sober skin without God. The loneliness, the restlessness, the irritability, the fact that I just blow up everything in my life and continue to blow up everything in my life. In nearly all cases, it says their ideals must be grounded in a power greater than themselves if they are to recreate their lives. I needed my life to be recreated. I was unfixable. That's the way I felt. And I didn't want to fix my old relationships, and I didn't want to fix my old job, and I didn't want to fix my old family, and I didn't want to fix my fix. I wanted to be something new. I wanted to be a new man. You know, I'm just going to say something. I grew up as a Catholic boy, and I lost it somewhere. You know when I think I lost it? When I turned into like a teenager. And they had this, it's funny because the Catholic Church has this sex ideal that I just think is like impossible to live up to. You know what I mean? Oh, you can't have sex with anyone you're not married to. That's really what chased me away from the church, because I became interested in women and I just didn't want to live that way. And I didn't. And it's funny because I just read my inventory to my newest sponsor, my sponsor Mickey, and he said, Anthony, what's your real beef with the Catholic Church? So I told him, I said, I can't live up to that sex ideal, you know? And he said, I get that. It's honest. He said, how are you doing with your sex ideal? You know, here's the thing. I called up this guy, Tom, and I said, man, I don't know what you guys are talking about in Alcoholics Anonymous as far as higher powers. I just don't know. I'm a Catholic. I believe in God. You know, and I'm going to needle them because that's what I do. I don't know. Is anyone else like that? They could just needle people. Like, I know better than you, and I know the best, and I know this. And he says to me, he says, do you realize that your religion, like, your whole religion is based around one event? And I said, yeah, I know what that is. And he said, what is it? And I said, it's the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And he said, okay.
He said, let me ask you this. Do you believe that happened? And I said, yeah, I guess I believe that happened. Why wouldn't I believe that happened? And he said, let me ask you one further question. He said, do you believe that you can tap into that same power, the power to raise a man from the dead, and you can access that power? And my mind was like blown. My head started spinning. I was like, what is this guy talking about? But I want to tell you something, man. Right here, from the third page of the first chapter in the book, we're not even at the first chapter in the book, right? We're still in the preface and the forewords and the doctor's opinion. They're telling us what the power is. It's the power to resurrect our lives. It's the power to recreate our lives. It's the power to be reborn. And if we're not talking about this in Alcoholics Anonymous, we're not really talking about the solution that they are. I'm just going to say that we have one problem in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you can listen, if you guys disagree with what I'm about to say, I'm just going to tell you, you're wrong. You can call your sponsor, but you're wrong. We have one problem in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not alcohol. You know what it is? It's alcoholism. Right? And we have one solution in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know what it is? It's a relationship with God via the vehicle of the 12 steps. Now, you could call it whatever you want. That's what we say in Alcoholics Anonymous. Call it whatever you want. I call it God, and I do it unapologetically. You know, this is the power that resurrected my life. This is the power that recreated my life. We got about 10 minutes here, so I'm just going to skip to a different... section of the book. If you guys have your big book and you want to just skip open to the chapter, there is a solution. And there's just one little paragraph that I just want to focus on, because it really it speaks to the crux of the problem. And it's on page 24. And it's the only paragraph on the page that's completely italicized. Isn't it? Says this: the fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drinking. Now, I used to go into meetings and I would see people, and I literally would see a guy raise his hand and say, my name is Anthony and I'm an alcoholic and I choose not to drink today.
I'm under no delusion that every single person who walks into an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting is an alcoholic, right? It's my job as a sponsor, when I see a newcomer come through the room, to approach that person and to take them through at least the first step, because I owe it to them to allow them to see their truth. Because I want to let you know something. Like, if you're not an alcoholic, don't waste your time in Alcoholics Anonymous. A lot. If you go into a meeting every day, that's 365 hours a year, dude. You go into some conventions, it's more. You know what I mean? If you're throwing $2 in the basket every time you go to a meeting, that's almost $1,000 a year. Listen, take your money and give it to the political party of your choosing and do something good for the world. If you're not an alcoholic, you know, go take some snowboarding lessons. But if you are an alcoholic at the conclusion of the first step, I can tell you, you're in desperate, desperate, desperate need for something greater. And so, the fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. It doesn't say non-existent. You notice that it says practically non-existent. And the truth is that sometimes my willpower will work. You know what I think of the mental obsession like? There's another book out there, and it talks about this serpent, right, that comes to a woman, and it pss, pss, and it doesn't tell her a complete lie. It tells her a half lie, right? And the truth is, like, that's what my mind will do to me. Sometimes my willpower will work. And it will tell me that this time it'll work. This time, Anthony, it's going to work. I promise you, this time it's going to work. It becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times, it says, to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of suffering or humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We have no defense against the first drink. You know, it took me a very, very long time. I got this thing about the allergy. Like, you know what would happen to me when I'd have this allergic reaction? I have a craving for more. And that craving would be more alcohol, but more of everything. You know what I mean? Once I lit that up and I had a couple, you know, and it might have been not have been after the first one, but after the third or fourth one, when I really started to experience the effect produced by alcohol, right? All of a sudden, I had this insatiable craving for more. And I have some more of that stuff, and I'll take some more of that stuff, and I'll have some of that stuff too. Whatever you got, I'll take it. And the way it would look for me was I would disappear and I'd be at the extended stay hotel and for days and days and days, and my phone would go off and I wouldn't answer anyone's texts or calls. I'd end up losing my job again. I'd end up losing my relationship again. I'd end up broke again. All the credit cards charged to max again. Again. Back in the same place again. But the one thing I couldn't get was that the real powerlessness of this illness is not over the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth, the sixth, the seventh, the eighth, the ninth, or the tenth. I always could eventually stop, and did routinely. But what I couldn't stop doing, I just couldn't stop picking it back up. And I have to understand that my mind is abnormal. And it lies to me, and I can't believe anything it says. You know, I don't know, but if you guys can identify with anything I'm about to say, you're really screwed. I'm just telling you that right now. You're screwed unless you find something, you know. And listen, I'm not going to say that Alcoholics Anonymous is the only solution. The book tells us it's not. But you better find something, you know. Because I could have a relationship. I could have potential in-laws. I could have a job and have a conference call, and I got to go by, and I got to pick up the girlfriend's kid and bring her to the recital, and you know, and then I got to go over to the office and involve myself in a conference call, and then you know, I'm going to go over to the potential in-laws and drop the cake, whatever it is. But it's 11 o'clock in the morning, and I got all these things to do, and the thought crosses my mind that maybe it might be a good idea to stop by the bar just to see what the guys at the Dart League are doing. Sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? You know, or maybe she just won't know. I'll just have three. You know, I'll be home at 11 p.m. Oh, sorry. 12 a.m. Oh, sorry. 1 a.m. 4 a.m. Oh shit, I can't go to work. Oh my god, it's 2 p.m. Oh my god, I can't stop. I don't know, man. I couldn't think of a lonelier place to be. So really, I just want to say this. I have an abnormal body. If I put it in me, I can't stop. Even if I pull the emergency brake up, can't stop. I can't stop. And you want to know something? Like, I can't stay stopped. Because I have an abnormal mind. You know, my first step truth, I used to come into AA and I would hear people say, you know, I hope you're licked, boy. Anyone ever hear that? I hope you're licked this time. You realize you just can't do it anymore. I had such a deep experience with the first step that I understood something about alcoholism. The first step doesn't say that I can't drink. The first step says that I'm bodily and mentally different than my fellows, and I'm going to drink and I'm going to drug until one of three things happen. Either A, I'm going to die, right? Either B, I'm going to go permanently insane, or C, I'm going to find God. And those are my choices. And I just want to say something real quick about permanent insanity, and then I'll turn it over to you guys, right? But I was sponsoring a kid, and you know, the kid, you know, listen, I just came back from Colorado. I was out in Colorado, and the reason I went out to Colorado was to visit an old sponsee who's now sitting in prison. You know, and I had a friend of mine, and he came to me and he said, can you take my son through the 12 steps?
And I said, yeah, bro, no problem. I said, but you know what? Let me actually pray about that. Because you know what? I, in hindsight, when I thought about it, I was confused about it at first because I was like, number one, the guy didn't ask me. You were asking me. Number two, it's your son. So who's going to be a sponsor, me or you? Right? And number three, I just didn't know about his willingness. But I did pray about it. And I went to my sponsor and I talked to God about it. And I wound up at a kitchen table with this kid. And I was taking him through the book, and I think we were somewhere in this chapter that we just discussed. And he looked up at me with his big brown eyes. He was 17 years old. And he looked up at me with his big brown eyes, and he said, Anthony, I just can't do this, man. I'm 17 years old, and you and my dad are telling me to go to meetings every day and do 90 meetings in 90 days and do step work. And blah, blah, blah. I just can't do it, man. I want to have a good time with my life. I want to date women, and I want to have fun. And I listened to him and I said, Andrew, I understand. I do understand where you're coming from, but I just want to let you know I'm here for you. So if you ever want my help, you have my number. Give me a call. The next call I got from him, he was in a county jail in Colorado. And he said, Anthony, I got my big book. What do I need to do? He was being arraigned for a felony charge of attempted murder. He got drunk and high one night and he tried to kill someone. And that kid will be in prison for the next 20 years of his life. How's that for permanent insanity? Anyway, I want to thank you guys for having me. And I'm going to turn the meeting over to you. And I guess take it from there.